Legal Matters.
13 minutes past 8 o'clock. Welcome back. You're listening to me, Gershel Brooksy, on 702 in Cape Talk. And as you heard, this is the Legal Matter slot. And as I was saying earlier on, we're joined by Senior Associate at Adams & Adams, and that is, of course, Ramon Pereira. Ramon, good evening to you, and thank you for joining us. A very interesting conversation that we're having this evening, and that is around AI or artificial intelligence. And I can imagine that there's a number of foundations that we can build in terms of this conversation around AI and whether it should have a legal right to own, you know, the inventions that it creates, et cetera, et cetera. But I think first and foremost, good evening to you, man.
Hi, good evening.
Great stuff.
So the artificial intelligence as an inventor has been quite a big topic at the moment just around the world, with quite a few judgments and sort of patent offices in particular, which have been considering this topic, and predominantly the United Kingdom, and then you've also had some judgments out of Taiwan, and then also Australia, and then recently South Africa also had a development in this as well.
Absolutely fascinating. We'll drill down into those details because I'm really looking forward to that part of the conversation. But I mean, I guess, you know, it's probably a bit of a silly question, but maybe, you know, in case listeners are listening to this conversation and don't quite understand, how do we define AI? What is artificial intelligence? And I think also along with that, there's also the high probability that we may think that we know what AI or artificial intelligence is, but we don't necessarily know what it is.
Yeah, so I'm definitely no expert. That's not my field in terms of computer programs, but from a basic understanding level, as I understand it, with this particular AI, which has sort of gone around the world in the court case, it's an AI called Datas, and what it is, it's a bunch of neural networks, which in essence, if you think about the way that your brain works, your brain works in terms of mapping out all the information that you have, and then on top of that, you then sift out what is important, what is not important. You then create links of your own. And I think what artificial intelligence is trying to do, on a very simplistic level, is trying to map and trying to do the exact same thing that your brain would do. And that's where sort of artificial intelligence comes in. I think on a basic level, you can have artificial intelligence which does just very simple things for you, so it's more kind of a tool. I just picked up the end of the conversation, I think, that you were just having with someone on before, where it's auto-filled in documents. Or at the moment, we have what we call a bot. I'm not sure whether we would call it an artificial intelligence, but in our firm, where it downloads information and puts that information into our system without having to have human input in that. So that can be considered a form of artificial intelligence, I guess, but that's more kind of an automation and a tool. What we're finding now, and that's what these cases are kind of bringing up, is that we're now moving into a space where technology is advancing far enough, is when exactly, are we there yet? One question is artificial intelligence at a point where it can mirror the same thing that a human can do, which is specifically inventing a new something, a new invention of some sort? And if it is, then can it be recognized as an inventor? So it's a question of whether we've reached that point. We're not 100% certain, and I don't think anyone really knows just quite yet whether we are there yet. But that's kind of the development. Is the AI more of a tool, so they're still basically just a computer, or is it an autonomous sort of being, and does it then need to be recognized sort of separately, have its own legal personality, its own rights separately?
That's what I was going to ask you, and I was hoping that I wasn't going to, you know, go too deep down the rabbit hole. But I mean, that immediately, you know, takes me back to that question of where does a machine end and where does a human being begin? And do we only strictly define it in those, you know, clear lines? Because, I mean, obviously my car outside can't necessarily own a patent, own property, own you know, intangible property in the form of patents and those types of things. But at the very same time, we were talking about artificial intelligence, which is simply a machine. So I guess it does raise that question around whether artificial intelligence, whether machines, computers, robots, however we define them, if they have sufficient artificial intelligence, whether they can actually have rights. Are we at that stage of the legal debate already?
So I think let's take a step back to what do we define with an artificial intelligence? Where does it end? Where does the machine end? And where does the sort of human input end? And I think the main kind of criteria was at least argued, or at least what these guys and with Davis are trying to argue, is that they put in information, and then what they get out information, and they get out some kind of product, which the AI then tells you this is what they decided a good product would be. This is a good invention. And I think what we're grappling around the world with is exactly that. You know, is it just a machine that we're just simply putting in information, and it's actually all it's doing is just crunching numbers and then spewing something out, and then it's basically just a tool? Or is it doing something on a higher level, sort of a, if you want to equate it to humans, on a more sort of cognitive level, is it making those links that you would with the brain? And the way I think about it, I was actually explaining it to my mom earlier today, because she also couldn't wrap her head around it, how can an AI invent? And I was trying to explain to her, it's the same as if an engineer goes to university, they get all of this information, they get all of this input. They then go to work at a company. The company says to them, these are all of the pieces of information that are relevant to your particular field. We want you to create a new invention. And then what the engineer does, he looks at everything that's currently in the market. He then says, look, okay, actually, I think this could be more efficient if we tweak this. I think this could be more efficient if we tweak that. And then a new invention is basically created. So in that way, how is it anything different to an AI, which you're just pumping it full of information? It then does all this correlation on its own. And then it creates and finds all of these different links. And it's trying to find where exactly is there creation involved? Where exactly is there some kind of spark of invention imbued within that? Whether we're there or not, I'm not 100% certain. But I do think once we are there, and maybe once, whether they have person that you sort of, so coming to the second part of it, which was the legal personality, I think from that perspective, it's when an AI is maybe a little bit more autonomous, then I think that legal personalities become more important. At the moment, the question I've been very interested in is whether an AI can be an inventor. And I think an AI can be an inventor at this stage where we are right now. And I personally don't think that there's an issue with an AI being an inventor. But I don't go as far as to say that an AI can actually own an invention. And it's maybe a little bit of legal gymnastics to a certain extent, but it's not to say that it has legal personality. It's more just to say it is able to invent, and you need to acknowledge it's able to invent for a sort of a myriad of reasons, which I can get into. But you need to acknowledge it can invent, but it doesn't mean that it necessarily owns. And if it doesn't own, then it doesn't have to have legal personality.
No, for sure. And I mean, I find it fascinating because, I mean, I guess when it comes to human beings, this happens on a day-to-day basis to some extent, fairly or unfairly for that matter, because let's assume that I'm here at 702 doing this show and I don't know, I invent something amazing on air. Don't ask me what that is, but I invent this amazing thing on air, this amazing radio experience. It's highly unlikely that I end up owning said invention per se, and that to a large extent I'll probably have to find myself at the very minimum, you know, fighting in court, you know, and trying to convince a judge or the world that I'm the inventor of it and that 702 doesn't own it, et cetera, et cetera. But I'm the inventor, and ultimately 702 is the owner of said invention. That's really what I'm getting at.
Yeah, I mean, a classic example of that is the Please Call Me, the Please Call Me case that's gone through court cases at the moment. So, so I mean, on a very sort of basic level, you can say that. The way that I like to think of AI, and it's actually the way that the Australian, in this particular case, whether an AI can be an inventor, and the way that the Australian court case, the later judgment, which is a federal court judgment, the way that they equated it, was your AI can sort of be seen as a fruit tree. So a farmer owns a fruit tree, and in your land you have this fruit tree. And in what that tree does is it produces fruit. Now, our law actually recognizes that fruit as something separate and distinct from that tree, which is able to be owned separately and distinctly from that particular tree. But how exactly does that happen? So as soon as that fruit is picked, it's separate from the tree, so it's no longer a part of the tree. It's its own entity, but who owns that? And our Roman Dutch law, the way that they brought it in was to say that whoever is an owner and the possession of that land on which that tree is built, they will then possess and own, or they will possess the fruit, and then there's an automatic assumption that possession, so whoever possesses it, is then the owner of that particular thing. So, and obviously, again, that's what we call a prima facie, right? But it's so the possession, so ownership flows through possession, is the idea of it. So if you think of your AI as being on this land, so, you know, on a server that belongs to a particular company, they then produce a fruit, which is an invention, separate and distinct from itself, that is completely separate. Then that fruit is then owned by the owner and possessor of that particular AI. And that would be then the company or a person who owns and controls the AI itself.
I find that quite fascinating. And let, if I can just take it a step back. So I guess, you know, you can end up with this AI, this form of artificial intelligence in one of two ways, right? Either Chris is really amazing. He invents this AI and, you know, through machine learning, et cetera, he tells me, look, this is what this thing will do for you. And I buy it for him for a pretty sum. Hopefully he's a decent negotiator. He walks off rich. And I'm going to walk off, you know, becoming wealthier over time because of this AI that I bought from him, right? And then, you know, I tell the AI through whatever means that, listen, I'd like you to invent the greatest and best cell phone ever in the history of humanity. Yeah. And the cell phone then is produced. So I guess, you know, taking so using that specific example and then reversing the process, what my question is ultimately is how then do we allot ownership to, say, the AI when I specifically got the AI for the purpose of creating said cell phone, if that makes sense?
No, 100%. And that's kind of what I mean by there's a myriad of reasons. If we don't recognize an AI as an inventor, then the problem is that who owns whatever this AI then creates later on. So you said Chris now sells you this AI. The problem thing is, does Chris then own it? Because if AI can't be an inventor, then it must be the person that programmed the AI. So then that must be Chris. But Chris is no longer in the picture because all that Chris was involved with was just programming. That's all that he did. And that's kind of the problem, and that's one of the problems that the Australian court highlighted, is that who then is the owner? Is it then the person who sees, who reads the information off of the AI computer, and that's that person who is then the inventor? Because then it could just be an arbitrary person who just happens to be in the room when the AI actually spews out this information. My argument is that you, as because you own and possess that AI, you are then the owner of any of the fruits that AI produces. So any industrial fruit is the way that I think that we're calling it now. Any industrial fruit that AI creates, you as the owner and possessor of the AI, you then own that particular invention. But that still means that the AI is an inventor because it is the one who actually invented, not someone else.
I absolutely find that quite fascinating. And we'll start looking at obviously what the law says, both domestically and internationally, I guess. And then you'll give me guidance in terms of where we find the best practice, where we find the greater advancement in these arguments as we go forward. I see that there's a couple of voice notes coming through, you know, with people with inputs and questions. So please, by all means, if you guys have anything to say on the subject, which I think is quite fascinating, 011-883-0702, alternatively 021-446-0567. That's where you give us a call. And you can all, obviously drop us a voice note on 072-702-1702, or you can send us a short text message there. And then hashtag Aubrey Masango Show. That's both on Twitter as well as on Facebook. That's how you guys can get a hold of me. Chris, are we good with a voice note? Yeah, it is, Ramon.
Yeah, of course.
Something happened. I don't know. It seemed that WhatsApp failed us there for a second. We'll get back to that voice note. In terms of it, I mean, has this actually been brought to our court system and under what circumstances? What happened here?
So in South Africa, it hasn't been brought to our court systems yet. In South Africa, so there's an overarching patent system, which the owner of this is, which is Dr. Saylor. There's an AI called Davis. But there's an overarching system, and what he's doing is he's now trying to file these patents around the world and recognizing the AI's inventor. And that's why you're sort of mushrooming up all of these different all of these different court cases around the world simultaneously. In South Africa, he also entered in South Africa to file a patent application here. And long story short, the registrar, the patent office, has granted that patent. So in essence, it appears, just on the face of it, that our patent office has recognized an AI as an inventor. So it's the first country in the world to have done that. But there's a caveat to that, and that's that our South African patent system is what is termed a registration system. All it does, it doesn't complete what is called substantive examination. So in South Africa, if all of your all the documents are signed, everything is filed, everything is done, the registrar just checks to see, okay, are all these documents signed? Is everything here that needs to be here?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, check, okay, and then proceeds to grant. And that's our patent system, which is different to other patent systems in the world.
Okay, so two things emerge out of that I find absolutely interesting is the fact that we're the first country then to have assigned a patent to artificial intelligence, right?
Yeah, so it's not assigned a patent. So just to clarify, the AI doesn't own the patent.
Mm-hmm.
It's Dr. Saylor that owns the patent. So Dr. Saylor is the applicant.
Okay.
But what it's recognized is that AI is the inventor. In other words, for all intents and
purposes,
recognized that AI created it, but it hasn't recognized, we haven't recognized that the AI is the owner of it.
Okay. Sorry, my mistake. Yeah. And they, again, I'm making that mistake of mixing up the two. So the AI is the inventor, but this doctor is the owner of the patent. Do I have that correct?
Yes.
Okay, great.
Yeah, that's correct.
Which is actually quite fascinating. So, and what you're saying is that, you know, it's just a simple process of making sure that you fill out the documents correctly. Hence why I would then come and see you, Ramon, or any of your other partners within your law firm to make sure that if I do have a patent, if I have a particular idea, you know, across all my T's and dot all my I's, and boom, I have the patent in place. I'm the owner of the patent.
100%, yes.
And that patent could then be invented by artificial intelligence. So how does that then happen? I mean, what is the legal recognition? And this is my last question before we go into another break, right? What is then the recognition, legally speaking, of this AI, considering that even though the AI doesn't own the patent, but is credited as the inventor, what status does that give the artificial intelligence, if anything?
Well, it doesn't give it any status. So it doesn't give it any legal status. But the question, and there have been other people in South Africa, their opinion is that this patent itself is eligible to challenge. So generally, because our system is a system of registration, what happens is that patent validity is then challenged in court. So the theory is that this particular patent would be open to challenge based on the fact that the AI cannot be recognized as an inventor. And one of the reasons, which is the reason which is circulated throughout the world as well, which I can get into after the break, which is about that an inventor cannot have assigned the right. So in South Africa, I think that we can get around that. I think we can get around the argument that we don't have to have absolute assignment of rights from an inventor to an applicant, in my opinion. But there are others, obviously, who believe that that isn't possible and that this patent will be invalidated eventually in the court.
Okay, so let's look at both those arguments, if you don't mind, and I'll give you the opportunity to give a decent explanation of them. I wouldn't want to muddle them with my sort of, very rudimentary understanding of the process. But thanks for clarifying it thus far. 28 minutes to go before we get to 9 o'clock. Ramon Pereira on the line with us, a senior associate at Adams & Adams.
Legal Matters.
26 minutes to go before we get to 9 o'clock. And, of course, we're speaking to Ramon Pereira, senior associate at Adams & Adams. And, Ramon, if I'm not mistaken, what we are talking about at this stage is obviously what the courts would then say in terms of the recognition of AI as the inventor of you know, a patent. I mean, I'm really looking forward to understanding that.
Yeah, so I think if we maybe try and do sort of the hypothetical court case and the hypothetical arguments that would be put on both sides. So I'll begin with the arguments against the AI. which have been forwarded in other court cases. And we could kind of look to see other court cases. For example, South Africa follows the UK cases quite closely because we have a common law system. Mm. And the UK courts, what they've stated is, one, an inventor must be a natural person. And the US, and particularly US case in particular as well, found that an inventor has to be a natural person. Mm. In the US case, their wording of their particular Patents Act is very different, and it actually does have the fact that it needs to be a human person as an inventor. So they would need to amend their legislation if they wanted to overcome this. In the UK, they've also had a similar argument saying that, one, there needs to be a natural person, and it was also argued in Australia as well. And what you would look to is first of all, that leg of the argument, and you'd look to say, does our act require an inventor to be a natural person? So that's sort of the first leg you'd need to overcome. But the second leg, and I think personally the stronger leg, that would be more difficult to overcome, is that in terms of an invention, there needs to be an originator of that invention, and that originator has to be able to own and possess an invention, so the argument goes. Is that it needs to hold and have the invention, and then in order for the applicant or whoever eventually files the patent and gets the patent awarded, in order for them to have a valid patent, they have to show that there was a transfer of rights from that originator over to the applicant of some sort. And what they say, the predominant argument for that, is that an AI is incapable because it does not have legal personality. So other things, if you think of other things in our world that are abstract and don't actually and sort of are created by law, so a company is an abstract thought, it's an abstract being, it's not a real thing, but it is recognized in law to have legal personality, so it's able to physically own something, right?
Mm, mm.
And what they're saying is, and the predominant argument, I think, around the world, which is this is the predominant argument, is that an AI doesn't recognize it, doesn't have legal personality. And if a court now decides that an AI does have legal personality, one, it could be considered to be making law, which courts aren't allowed to do. And so what they're saying is that the policymakers, so in other words, your legislature, they need to preside on this. They need to make a decision on this. The courts will not recognize an AI as an inventor because basically they're saying that our legal or all legal systems don't have enough in them in order to cover an AI as an inventor. Okay, and that, I think, is a strong argument. I think it's a valid argument. My argument on the other side of that, so let's just first deal with, I think, the sort of natural person argument to start with. Just on the natural person, in our Patents Act, it does refer to an inventor as being him, and obviously him or her is a human as well. But in terms of our act, it also references him in a number of different other places within the act, where it's actually referring to an applicant, and an applicant can be an abstract company. It can be other things as well. So I think that we could get around that sort of argument that him implies that it has to be a natural person. So let's put that argument aside for now in terms of our South African law. On the other side of the argument, which is the originator and whether the originator is able to transfer the right. My opinion comes back to the industrial fruit argument, which is the owner and the possessor of the AI, that the owner and possessor of the AI automatically assumes the rights of the invention because they are in possession of that. Now, an argument against that is to say that no, in terms of patent law requires that the invention is assigned. And I absolutely agree with that. Our patent law requires that there has to be an assignment of rights. An assignment basically just means that there has to be some kind of written agreement or some kind of obligation that has to have flowed, transfer of rights has to have occurred. And I agree with that argument and I accept that. But my counter-argument to that is that at the time of creation of that particular invention, our Patents Act doesn't actually kick in. And so at the time of the originating of the creation of that invention, there's an automatic flow of rights from the AI at the exact time of creation. And so it gets around the Patents Act. The Patents Act doesn't actually specifically apply at that point. It's only once you file a patent that suddenly the Patents Act comes into play. And for that reason, I think it's a conflation of sort of traditional property law And traditional property law allows for this automatic transfer of property rights in the thing. And so I'm saying the invention itself was transferred prior to the Patent Act coming into play. And so it is an automatic transfer of rights from the AI to the controller and the possessor of the AI. If that makes sense.
I mean, so I guess it's one of those absolutely fascinating arguments that we would see eventually, making its way to our courts. But it takes me back, and do tell me if I'm being a bit sillier. It's always awkward doing the legal matters show because, yes, I studied law, but I never practiced, right? So it's one of those scenarios whereby, and unfortunately, just because you studied something, what was it, 2 decades ago, doesn't necessarily mean that you've stayed up to date, especially with these new developments around tech law, around information systems, et cetera, including what you're talking about when we talk about artificial intelligence. But are we moving closer and closer to the space whereby I've seen, articles popping up recently and presumably because I've done some research on this very recently as well, around the question of recognizing the legal, artificial intelligence as a legal person, as a legal entity, because I guess we have companies that are, recognized as legal persons or juristic persons, and then simultaneously you and I are also persons in our own right. So are we going to move to a category where there's going to be a third factor, a third category, and we're speaking specifically of artificial intelligence eventually?
Yeah, but I think eventually we're going to be moving to that point. My kind of feeling towards where we are right now, and coming back to the question of whether an AI can be an inventor, is more that if our legal system allows for that, there's nothing, in other words, preventing us from acknowledging an AI as an inventor, then we should allow that. I don't think we should go as far as saying that in doing that, I've now recognized the AI as a separate legal personality. I think that it's doing is just saying that the AI is able to invent, and it, again, solves a myriad of different other problems if you don't recognize an AI as an inventor. But in terms of legal personality, I don't think the way that you would do that is you would enact legislation and you would recognize, or you'd specifically you'd create some kind of law, some kind of act which would recognize and say, okay, the owner and possessor of an AI is able to create an invention. So they could be quite explicit about it. They could perhaps be more general about it, but it will require some kind of enactment from a policymaker. A court won't give legal personality, and I don't think a court should give legal personality necessarily. I do think that a policymaker will be required to give legal personality. Do we need to have legal personality at this stage? I don't think so personally. That's my opinion.
But it does raise that interesting question for sort of your industrialist that then employs, and I'm sorry for using terms here that seem to give this personality, but if I go and obtain artificial intelligence, so either I tell my R&D department to develop me artificial intelligence that serves a particular purpose, and they come up with this, it comes up with this wonderful invention, I did it for the purpose of owning said invention. I never intended my artificial intelligence to own this thing, or not to own it, but to be accredited as the inventor. It's my invention, albeit through another means, if that makes any sense. And I guess if we have to go through history, Ramon, I'm sure you'll agree with me that all too often what you would find is that someone might be recognized as the inventor, but they're not the person that actually picked up the spanners and the screwdrivers and did the wiring. Yeah. You know, someone else did it. Yeah. And then that person was sort of said, listen, that was your job anyway, and we paid you for it.
Mm. No, exactly. And so I think the argument against that, I think what people would say is that, but then your AI is just a tool. And all it's doing is, even though you programmed it to create an invention, it's still not inventing. But that doesn't get around the issue of then who is the inventor, because our patent system requires an inventor to be listed. And that's kind of where we are in the quandary exactly. I mean, this is why I find it fascinating as well, is that we're kind of in this space where it's, people are saying it's, but it's a tool, so it can't be an inventor. It's just the same as any other machine. But then it is creating something. So how exactly do you recognize that? I think a way that maybe that could fit in is exactly, and I think it would be maybe just And I think maybe the legislation is saying something along the lines of whoever is the owner and possessor of an AI. So actually just sort of codifying what I believe the Roman Dutch law allows for now anyway. But I think just codifying it specifically by saying whoever is the owner and possessor of an AI will automatically own anything that that AI creates or invents. I think that's kind of probably where legislation will go.
For sure. Let's just listen in on that voice note that I promised you earlier. I think that our WhatsApp seems to be up and running again. I wonder how the AI is doing in that space. Go for it, Chris.
Sure. Eric here. Can the algorithms be classified as a basic of AI? If it can be classified like that, is it that possible that the AI solemnly is based on what humans does, which is calculated on algorithms? Thank you.
That's an interesting question, Ramon. I don't know if you have an answer for that one. It sounds way too technical for my little brain.
So what I understood from his video is saying that at a very basic level, an AI can be considered an algorithm. And I think what he's saying is an algorithm that that monitors human nature and then it will spew something out based on that, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that? I'm not 100% certain. I'm not sure what the question was specifically then relating to that. If it was related to an algorithm, is he then saying that...
From what I understood, I think his question was, do we then take it back to the algorithm? So I guess, do we take it to the root of the algorithm being the originator, which I think would probably complicate things a little more, isn't it? Because, I mean, algorithm is simply the mathematics that this is built on.
Yeah. So the algorithm is a computer program, which is also an AI. So I think it comes back to that thing of, okay, do you then, is the owner of, say, that this algorithm creates an invention, then do you look at the person who programmed that particular thing? And again, I don't think that it should go to the programmer, because the programmer, you know, the programmer could be, you know, 10 years ago who programmed it, and now, you know, why would he have any rights to an invention that my AI is now creating 10 years later?
So, Ramon, I mean, let's bring it home a little bit, or a little closer to home, so to speak. I mean, one of the key things that a lot of people sort of, you know, react to when you talk about artificial intelligence is this notion that the machines will rise. And I think the bigger threat for a lot of people is not necessarily they begin to live in a Terminator/Matrix world, but that machines are literally going to replace us. I mean, going back to the origins of our conversation, understand that there are two categories of artificial intelligence, right? There's human enhancement. So whether it's your WhatsApp assisting you in completing your message a little faster, or Google assisting you in completing your search term a little quicker, that's the one thing. It enhances what you're doing anyway as a human being. Then there's also then the fact that in some spaces, AI is actually replacing human beings. You know, you spoke about bots earlier on. So now you don't necessarily, with a bot, you don't necessarily have to hire a team of call center agents to take calls or whatever. People can, 3, 4, 5 different people can chat to the same bot at the exact same time. And that bot, through learning over time, understands generally what people are asking for and what the appropriate response is in turn, and so on and so forth. Yeah. But the point is, a human has been removed from that functionality and a robot has been placed into that space. So a lot of people are worried that, listen, my job is going to be taken by a robot pretty soon, or a computer, or whatever you want to refer to it as. How then, what does this tell us about artificial intelligence, and how do we then quell the fears of people that are saying that we're building these machines that are going to replace us? And it's especially scary in a country where we have a 35% unemployment rate.
I think over history, you always constantly have disruptive technologies which completely shift the job market over time. Mm. I mean, if you think back, I think one of the classic examples of the first industrial revolution was when they were just making hosiery. And then suddenly there was a machine that could then make hosiery, so people weren't stitching it and doing it all themselves. And then obviously there was a massive backlash and unions got involved, and they said, but what about all of these jobs? And then the And then the first industrial revolution came in, and then those machines did replace people's jobs, but then other jobs were created, and then other things were created. And I think, look, you need to accept that AI is a disruptive technology, and it is here, and it is only progressing, and it will probably displace people's people's jobs. But there is, yeah, there will be certain things, I think, which an AI won't be able to do that humans will be better to do. A lot of kind of your field, more in terms of the creative side of things, I don't think AI is anywhere near being able to do that. So anything which is very much automated, anything which is sort of routine, rote, you can see that a lot in my work at the moment as well, is that can be obviously then automated and replaced on the other side. So thinking about, you know, I suppose, people need to think about how exactly their job would relate to whether it can be replaced or whether it can be automated.
I mean, there's always these lists that come out almost on an annual basis of skills that we need to develop and skills that we need to have in order not to be replaced by said machines, et cetera, et cetera. But, I mean, beyond that, do you think, you know, and I'm sorry for boxing you now into a suit yet again as a lawyer, but as a lawyer, do you see that we're going to see more and more of these complex cases arising around artificial intelligence, or is it still too soon or too early for us to make that prediction? Or are we getting what we're reading one too many sci-fi novels and watching one too many sci-fi movies, and we are necessarily excited over this for now?
Yeah, so I don't think that there's anything to be worried about at this stage, because I don't think artificial intelligence is at a level that people are not necessarily, because I think what people think when you say, okay, and the AI is an inventor, you need to create a legal personality, they're then thinking, okay, they're going to be robots running around living autonomously. I don't think that we're there, and I don't think we're there anywhere close to there at this stage. But I do think that we need to recognize that it is able to create, maybe it is and maybe it isn't, but there is going to come a point in our time where it is going to develop to a certain level where it is creating something. And we need to then deal with that at that stage as well. So I do think we are going to keep on coming up against this. And I think this is kind of sort of the coal face of patent law at the moment. And it's something that does need to be grappled with, and whether our legal system can apply it is something that needs to be considered.
No, for sure. And I think it is key on that basis. Looking at some of the other things, I'm just looking at, some of the WhatsApps that are coming through. I just want to see if there's anything specific to what you are talking about at the moment. Someone says, "Evening, Gershwell, and your guest is an AI invention affected by copyright law to legally belong to the inventor. Thanks." This is what this person is asking. I'm not too sure what the question actually is, and maybe we should have maybe distinguished between copyright versus artificial intelligence, and when does what apply?
So he's not wrong, because in terms of our law, I think where he's, or she, is seeing this link is computer programs. So a computer program is governed by copyright. So the person who creates the computer program will own the copyright in that computer program, and I think that's what they're thinking. And that's the whole issue, is that then, so the flow of the owner, well, the flow of the computer program per se, which is in essence the AI, the ownership in that then flows through copyright, using copyright. So in other words, you create an AI, or Chris creates an AI for you, and then the computer program itself, the ownership of the computer program itself is governed by copyright, and then he assigns that copyright over to you, and that's how you acquire ownership in the computer program itself. If that makes sense, and that's where they're creating that. And that's the issue. Patent law, but what we're talking about is the AI then going on and then creating something beyond that, so creating an invention beyond that. And that's something different, and that's something governed by something different, which would then be patent law. And then so your copyright no longer comes into play. But that's the whole thing, is that, again, so if the AI, if the AI is not recognized as an inventor, is it the person who created the AI? In other words, who is the originator of the copyright in the AI? Is that the person who's meant to own it? And again, 10 years down the line, Chris is not involved with you at all. Why then does he have any rights to anything that AI invents?
For sure. I mean, for me, it's actually really quite fascinating how this all is developing. But I guess that the biggest problem with it all, Ramon, is that we're not 100% sure where these technologies will lead us. I mean, the typical example that I use is I don't know, and I really don't want to give away your age, especially if I guess it incorrectly. But growing up, there was a show called late 80s, early 90s, it was called Beyond 2000. And they made all these predictions, right, about future technologies, et cetera, et cetera. And yes, a lot of that stuff came true because they spoke to futurists and scientists and inventors and people that were in the space, but a lot of that stuff sort of just disappeared out of the blue. I mean, go to Google now, there was Google Glasses and everyone thought that was going to be the rage and Facebook was going to come up with that stuff and, again, disappeared, right? No one knows. And I think every now and again, every 2 to 3 years, if not even, you know, sooner than that, you see a sudden shift and then the focus is this and then the focus is that. Self-driving cars and whatever else. So I guess that there's, for someone like you being a pioneer in the space, especially within the South African space, I'm sure this is exciting times.
No, massively fascinating. So there's also a discussion of whether that we're sort of entering a singularity, which is also that all of these technologies, so you're talking about self-driving cars, you're talking about automating things, you're talking about the internet, all of these are sort of maybe coalescing into a moment now, and AI is just one of those aspects of it, which all feed into each other, but there is an exciting sort of change coming.
I guess there's also going to be other exciting bits to it, and I'm thinking of the general South African market and labor market in particular, and that's the final point I'll make, is that as AI gets introduced more and more within the South African context and the fourth industrial revolution, and not just AI is you know, in the singular form, but the fourth industrial revolution as a whole gets introduced within South Africa, and we'll have to adopt it to remain competitive. I think you'll also find a lot of labor disputes emerging in courts. I think that, you'll find a lot of, contested territory in this particular space, because I'm thinking about, let's say, for example, they succeed in getting self-driving cars to work properly. You wouldn't have to hire truck drivers. You wouldn't have to have taxi drivers. You wouldn't have to have, some of our takeaway restaurants, some of them, they actually actively encourage you not to go and see the people at the counter. You should, put it on the touchscreen.
Yeah. Yeah, no, exactly. I think in terms of the South African job market, I think you do also then, and I think it always, in my opinion, South Africa, everything needs to sort of come down to education. It's also then trying to find this basis of making sure that the people are educated in the fields that are going to be productive there, and particularly in AI. Obviously, if you can try and get more kids sort of coding, or just some kind of basic understanding of coding, or just having a working knowledge of what exactly those kind of systems do and what you can do with those systems. So I think if you can try and harness the tool rather than being terrified of it and just trying to push it away, I think that would be a benefit in South Africa, certainly.
Awesome stuff. Look, I mean, if people want to read up more about this, if they want to find out more about it, does Adams and Adams have resources that people can consult on the website, or is there other aspects that you would like people to look into?
Yeah, sure. We've got a website, Adams, and it's called www.adams.africa. We've got a section in there which has all of our articles in there. I've recently written an article particularly on the AI as an inventor, which is definitely up in there. But people are also more than welcome just to get a hold of me. My details are on the website as well. And yeah, I'm more than happy discussing anything further with him.
Great stuff, Ramon. And thanks for chatting to us tonight. I understand you're actually technically on leave, so really much appreciated that you took the time out to have this conversation. No. I found it fascinating, and I hope I made some remote sense in what could be a minefield of a conversation.
No, exactly. There's so many sort of entry points into it that you also sort of don't know where to go. And like you said in the beginning, there's just sort of a rabbit hole. Once you start sort of researching this and investigating it, it's just, the depth is very deep.
I could run away with you. All the best to you, mate.
Yeah,
cheers.
Exactly.
Thanks, man.
Cool. Thanks so much, man.
Thanks. That was Ramon Pereira, Senior Associate at Adams & Adams.